The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The following radio program is for informational purposes only and is neither specific nor tailored financial advice to any individual. It is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the purchase or sale of any financial instrument. Always do your own due diligence and consult a financial advisor before making any investments. Investing involves risk, which can result in the loss of any or all principal. Peter Weitz is a registered investment advisor with Fusion Analytics Investment Partners, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor, as well as a registered rep with Fusion Analytics Securities, LLC, a FINRA-registered broker-dealer and SIPC member. All views expressed in this program are those of the host or guests and do not reflect the opinions of Fusion Analytics Investment Partners nor its affiliates. Your investments. How secure are you that they are secure? Do you want to know more about investing, retirement, and moving to the next level in business? Welcome to In Black and Whites, featuring host Peter Weitz. Our program will answer all of the questions about your future and so much more. It's all about smart business and smarter investing. Now, here is your host, Peter Weitz.
Hi, thanks. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Peter Weitz. Thanks again for our guest last week from American Century Investments. They're always fun to have on the program. This week, we've got probably one of my best guests in several months. And for those that have been listening, know that I've been touting this guest since I was actually able to be lucky enough to get him on my calendar. I'm going to introduce him in just a moment, but make sure you follow me on Twitter at Peter Weitz and on my blog, In Black and Whites. Weitz is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. I'll be posting some interesting comments from today's guest, and jumping right into it is what's going to be important, as we have a lot to cover, and I want to get to as much as I can with him. So I'm joined today by Scott Scalacci, who's a business and estate planning attorney. He has over 25 years of experience practicing law. He's a principal and founder of his boutique estate planning law firm in Boston, based in the historic Back Bay. He began his career as a corporate attorney at Skadden Arps, where he assisted in opening offices in Paris and Moscow in the early 90s. And during his time, he did a lot of private and public company corporate securities work dealing with countries such as Hong Kong, and he worked out of their New York and D.C. office. But more importantly, and the reason why I have him here, is his current practice focuses on estate and business planning matters, including tax and philanthropic planning for high net worth individuals and families. His practice includes asset protection and estate planning needs for international clientele, corporate executives, small businesses, owners, physicians, and attorneys, but he has a particular focus on helping same-sex couples and members of the LGBT community with their unique planning needs. He's a member of the Wealth Council, a national network of estate planning attorneys, where he works in collaboration with other attorneys nationally. And today we're going to talk about the ins and outs and the goods and bads and things you need to think about in estate planning if you are a same-sex couple. Without further ado, Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Peter. Nice to be here.
And I want to start off by just saying that, you know, obviously gay marriage has been, you know, a really big topic in the news. There's many states, I think it's 19, have actually approved same-sex marriages in the United States. And what's the behind that? What's the genesis behind that?
Well, it's funny because we're actually, and my head is spinning and I keep up with this stuff. Believe it or not, today we're up to 32 states. It was 19 a couple of weeks ago. It's changing all the time. The genesis really was the case that happened in Massachusetts now over a decade ago that kind of started this ripple effect. Years ago, there was some rumblings out of Hawaii where they thought they were going to establish gay marriage, and Congress got worried that it was going to become the Las Vegas of gay weddings in Hawaii, so they enacted the Defense of Marriage Act, and that was on the books for a long time until the Supreme Court last summer declared it unconstitutional. So it's an issue that's been kicking around for some time, and it keeps changing every day.
And talking about that Supreme Court, I assume you're referencing the DOMA case. Can you just give me a little background on exactly what that was?
Sure. So last summer, the Supreme Court, for the first time, looked at the whole gay marriage question in two different cases. One was the one from California. The name of the case was called Hollingsworth v. Perry. And the other one was the DOMA case, and it was brought by the widow Edith Windsor. The Perry case was never decided on the merits because of some procedural issues. So the Supreme Court never really reached a decision about whether there's a fundamental constitutional right for all same-sex couples to be married. But what they did do in looking at the Windsor case was decide that the Defense of Marriage Act, enacted under President Clinton, was indeed discriminatory under the Equal Protection Clause of the federal Constitution and declared it unconstitutional. And it really had the effect of saying, states, you can decide whatever you want about marriage, because states have always been permitted to regulate family law issues. And if you want to allow same-sex marriage, you can. And if you want to prohibit it, you can. But the federal government has to recognize whatever the state's doing in this area. So the federal government can't discriminate against lawfully married couples. And that's really what the Windsor and Supreme Court case was about last summer.
Yeah, and we're going to probably spend a pretty good portion talking about the federal level versus the state level, because I'm thinking that that's where a lot of this, the differences in what's actually going to happen occur.
Yeah, that's right, because there are certain legal rights that arise under federal law, like income tax or retirement planning. And then there are certain state rights, like the right to inherit from someone or bring a lawsuit for loss of consortium from your spouse. And those are state law issues. And it depends on what the legal right is to look at sort of where you get the benefit, I get, of being married, or the burden sometimes.
Yeah, and I want to cover, Scott, before we really dig into that, but I just want to make sure that we frame out your background in this field, because it is so unusual and probably maybe won't be going forward that someone has become so, you know, I don't want to use the term expert, but you've become so polished at something that's so relatively new. And, you know, in that regard, I understand that you've written a book that pertains to same-sex marriage. And I want to know what drove you to think of that. And what does the book really cover?
So the book is called Whether to Wed, A Legal and Tax Guide for Gay and Lesbian Couples. And it was really – the reason I wrote it was because I kept having the same conversation over and over again with these clients. It was a very similar profile. I mentioned earlier, Massachusetts was the first state to recognize same-sex marriage back in 2004. But at the time, even though the state recognized it, the federal government didn't. And so a lot of couples who had been together for decades, and as I like to say, they had long since figured out who was taking out the trash and who was paying for what, didn't rush to get married because they didn't feel like they needed to for their relationship. And so long as the federal government wasn't recognizing it, they thought it was kind of marriage light. And then all of a sudden, the Supreme Court decides the DOMA case last year, and all these couples who had been together for 20, 30, 40 years started coming forward and saying, look, we don't need to get married for us. We've already figured out our relationship stuff. But now that it's legal on a state level and a federal level, maybe we should or maybe we shouldn't. So will you help us evaluate what the kind of legal and tax issues are so we can figure out whether we should get married really just for legal reasons? And I kept having the same conversation, and I finally decided to put it down in a book and really help people walk through the pros and cons from a legal and tax perspective.
And that's interesting, and I want to talk a lot about that, because, you know, one of the things that, you know, that I think about, and you know, you and I have had this conversation, but I'm in retirement planning, and I have several of my clients that are lesbian or gay, and the question always comes up is, what do we do? And I know that that's the question 30,000 feet looking down, but to answer it briefly, can we now assume that gay couples are going to have the same tax benefits and same rights from an estate planning perspective that non-gay couples will?
Well, we have to be careful because it depends on where they live and where they might move to and where they might be when they die. Because until we get a federal recognition of this right, we still have a little bit of a patchwork going on. I mentioned at the beginning of the call that, you know, we've shot up from 19 to 32 states in the last couple of weeks. Certainly, it's true that, same-sex couples have the identical rights as opposite-sex couples with respect to marriage on both the state and federal level if they're in one of those 32 states. We call them recognition states. But if they're not in a recognition state, or if they move to or die in a non-recognition state, they may not have the exact same rights. And that's kind of what we're still grappling with from a planning perspective.
Yeah, and we're gonna. I want to talk more about that. So, I mean, the obviously, if you live in the same state and you're planning on being in the same state, potentially the rights are the same. But, you know, and I want to dig deeper really into what some of those rights really are. I mean, what if a couple, and you know, I'm gonna have to take a break prior to us getting into this, but you know, what if a couple, like you said, has been living together for 20 years, okay, and they made an estate plan based upon what they had. Maybe it was children from a prior relationship or something to that nature. And yet now they find that they can get married. Do they potentially have to undo what they did in their estate and start over?
Well, I don't know. It depends. You know, it always depends on what was set up and what the changes are. But almost always marriage causes people, straight or gay, to have to revise their estate plans because marriage brings new sort of rights and obligations around an estate that are different when you're not married.
And that's the point I want to focus on when we get back from the break. We're going to do that in just a minute. You're listening to the In Black and Whites radio program on Voice America Business.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Climbing Mount Everest is an amazing feat, and many have died trying to do so. However, more people have died descending Mount Everest than in reaching the summit. Part of the problem may be that people are so focused on reaching their objective that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will do or should be prepared for afterward. Similarly, people are so focused on saving for retirement and reaching retirement that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will encounter once they have actually retired. With one out of every four 65-year-olds today living past the age of 90, you may be retired longer than you are actually working. Have you devised a plan, process, and discipline to ensure that you will not run out of money? If you are not sure what to do, then simply contact Peter Weitz and his retirement team at Fusion Analytics. We help manage human emotions using three proprietary investment techniques. Our job is to evaluate the forces that the typical investor can't see so that wealth is preserved and not lost. Find out more at inblackandwhites.com. Weitz is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email Peter at inblackandwhites.com. In Black and Whites, we win by not losing.
What are your business goals? How do you plan to accomplish them? Your strategy for business growth matters, and the experienced corporate lawyers at Retzel will collaborate with you to develop and execute a customized plan designed to unlock value at your enterprise. Whether the growth you seek is domestic or international, organic or driven by acquisitions, our attorneys are here to propose innovative solutions and assist you every step of the way. For more information, visit us at www.ralaw.com. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to In Black and Whites. To reach Peter Weitz or his guest today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to peter at inblackandwhites.com. Weitz is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email Peter at inblackandwhites.com. Now, back to this week's program.
Hey, thanks. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Peter Weitz. You're listening to the In Black and Whites radio show. I'm joined today by estate planning attorney Scott Scalacci, and we were talking about the ins and outs and the nuances of gay marriage and the acceptance in the 32 states throughout the union that have accepted gay marriage and how that affects estate planning, particularly in that regard. And prior to the break, we just dipped into sort of the estate planning piece as it relates to the federal and state level. And I want to drill down that a little more, Scott. You know, when you're married, you're entitled to unlimited marital exchange between partners. And then you get into sort of this unified credit provision as to how much you could actually shelter prior to having to pay estate taxes. And I'm assuming that those sort of situations are very similar with gay marriage.
They're identical, in fact, Peter. The IRS came out with regulations a little over a year ago after the Windsor case came down, in which it basically said they were going to adopt the place of celebration rule, meaning if someone was validly married in a state, they would treat them for federal tax purposes, both income and estate tax purposes, as being married irrespective of where they moved to or died. So it doesn't make any difference vis-a-vis the IRS. Once you're married, you're going to be treated like any other married couple, which means I like to call it the Melinda Gates exemption. You can pass an unlimited amount of wealth to your spouse during lifetime and at death without any transfer tax applying. And so that's going to be the case for any same-sex couple that's lawfully married wherever they are. So we see in Massachusetts, for example, a lot of couples coming up from Florida where it's not still recognized in every county to get married, and then they go back to Florida, even though the state doesn't recognize it still, the federal government will for all tax purposes.
So just to clarify that, if I'm a gay couple living in Florida, I can go get married in Massachusetts and the IRS will consider that marriage to be valid for federal income tax purposes.
Good news and bad news. Sorry to interrupt because, you know, don't forget on an income tax side, you sometimes might get hit with what we all know as the marriage penalty. You might wind up actually paying more income taxes as a married couple, even though you'd never pay an estate tax.
And so that brings me to an interesting question, and you alluded to it just a moment ago. So the IRS has recognized it on a national scale, but what happens on the state level? So if I'm a gay couple and I get married in Massachusetts, for example, and then I move back to Florida, I guess, you know, from the federal level, I'm protected on my income tax. But what happens on the state level?
You're not, until the state recognizes the marriage, and this stuff keeps changing every day because there are dozens and dozens of cases percolating up around, but until the state recognizes it, you're not married for state law purposes. So you still have to file separate state income tax returns. Florida doesn't happen to have an income tax, but, you know, for all state law purposes, whether it's probating a will or making state claims for workers' comp, you're not going to be recognized as married under state law if you're in a non-recognition state.
And to me, that begs this question then. As the estate planning attorney that specializes in this, how do you plan for that?
Well, you have to do some fancy footwork. It depends on, of course, where people live and where they might move to. But a lot of lawyers like myself have been doing estate planning in the states that recognizing it and really setting up trusts that are governed by the law of the recognition state and then funding those trusts with assets so that you never have to worry about sort of the unfriendly state's laws. Sometimes for people who are really concerned about it, they may have a local co-trustee to make sure that they have jurisdiction of Massachusetts, for example, covering their trusts. But it depends on what people's objectives are and what their assets are and what they want to do. But oftentimes we're setting up trusts for people.
And are you finding that you're having to really know the state, basically the marital laws of every state, even though you're a practicing attorney in Boston?
You really do if they're coming to you from other states, and I have to affiliate with local counsel in those states because I'm not licensed to practice in every one of those states either, but it's a constantly moving target. I'm in a national sort of network of estate planning attorneys, so we all keep in touch with each other and keep each other updated on the listserv every day about what's going on with these court cases.
What would be some of the reasons, generically, obviously, you know, without having any specific details, to not get married as a gay couple?
That's a good question. So one that springs to mind is that marriage penalty I mentioned on income tax. I mean, I tell people run the numbers with your accountant or do it on TurboTax, but figure out what it would have been if you were married and what it would be if you're not married, and just do the math, because it's either going to be more or less. So that's one reason people sometimes shy away from it. Another reason, for people who are closer to needing nursing home care, in order to become eligible for Medicaid coverage, you basically have to be poor. And the way the Medicaid calculation works in terms of assets and income is it counts your and your spouse's assets. And so if you're not married, you don't count those assets. And if you are married, you do count them. So it might delay your eligibility for Medicaid. Those are a couple of reasons why sometimes people don't get married.
And would those be, I mean, would the same reasons apply to non-gay marriage?
Absolutely.
Right, so then essentially, the rules are the same.
Yeah, the rules are the same. I mean, you know, the reason we're having this discussion is because, you know, when you think about sort of how marriage happens in society, it's sort of ordinarily happens organically as people evolve in their relationships and they get to the point where they want to commit to one another, and this is a natural inflection point. In the gay community, we didn't have this option to get married, so we'd commit to each other by, I don't know, opening up a joint account or buying a house together or, you know, commingling assets. But now you have couples who have done that for years and now all of a sudden can be married. And so, like I said, it winds up being less of a romantic discussion about committing to each other and more of a legal and tax discussion.
Yeah, I would imagine, because you're dealing with people that potentially have been together for 20 plus years anyway.
And have considerable assets sometimes.
Right. And I'm going to imagine a lot of those assets are commingled.
Sometimes, although I have to tell you, the other thing I didn't mention that I always mention to my clients, you know, one reason you might not get married is because it's much more difficult to become unmarried. That is to say, you know, divorce is a painful process that is court supervised and has all sorts of regulations around it in any state you might be in. And if you're just together and break up, it's a different deal, right? It's easier to do. So go back to my couple who flies up to Boston to happily get married and goes back to Florida, and then all of a sudden the wheels come off the wagon on their relationship. Well, they can't go to a Florida court to get divorced because Florida doesn't recognize their marriage. So all of a sudden they have to move to another state to get divorced and go through a whole legal process to do that.
I can imagine that would be difficult, emotionally more than anything.
Well, it's emotionally difficult, and I call it the triple whammy, because you're gonna have to have the emotional downturn, you're gonna have to have the disruption of moving, and it's gonna cost you a lot of money, because you have to, the way you declare residency in Massachusetts is you file a state income tax return, which, oh, by the way, you didn't have to do in Florida, so all of a sudden you have to be paying state income taxes when you weren't before.
Yeah, and that's I think what's crazy about this whole thing is, so besides just creating an estate, which is what you would normally do for any couple that, you know, has amassed some wealth, now you've got to play this whole chess match of where do I live, how do I do it, what do I do, and if something happens, how do I actually go about undoing that?
And that's right. Seems, I mean, it is complicated. Yep.
And I would imagine that eventually, if all 50 states were to enact it, then it goes away. But for the time being, it's difficult.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, either this is going to happen on a state-by-state basis, which so far has been the trend, or the Supreme Court will issue a ruling and we get it for the whole country. There were a lot of people who thought that the Supreme Court was going to do just that. It had 7 different cases that were filed for an appeal, and just last week, 2 weeks ago, sorry, they denied all 7 appeals. They basically said, look, there's no discrepancy. They didn't say anything. They just denied the appeal. But the reading of the tea leaves is every federal court that's looked at this question from an equal protection standpoint has come down on the exact same side, saying it violates equal protection. So there's no difference of opinion among federal courts. So there's nothing really for the Supreme Court to decide. So the Supreme Court said, you know, continue thrashing this around states and deciding it on a state-by-state basis.
And that's, yeah, I guess the other question I have is in that regard, I mean, other than that, are you finding that there's any other differences in the marriage rights between the two? I mean, anything healthcare-wise, anything in that regard?
No, I mean, again, if you're in a recognition state, there are no differences under state or federal law. If you're in a non-recognition state, you get the federal benefits, but you don't get the state benefits. And so it still does depend on where you live and where you might die.
Yeah, and I want to touch more on that when we get back. We're going to take a quick break. Scott, I'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the In Black and Whites radio program on Voice America Business.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. What are your business goals? How do you plan to accomplish them? Your strategy for business growth matters, and the experienced corporate lawyers at Retzel will collaborate with you to develop and execute a customized plan designed to unlock value at your enterprise. Whether the growth you seek is domestic or international, organic or driven by acquisitions, our attorneys are here to propose innovative solutions and assist you every step of the way. For more information, visit us at www.ralaw.com.
Climbing Mount Everest is an amazing feat, and many have died trying to do so. However, more people have died descending Mount Everest than in reaching the summit. Part of the problem may be that people are so focused on reaching their objective that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will do or should be prepared for afterward. Similarly, people are so focused on saving for retirement and reaching retirement that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will encounter once they have actually retired. With one out of every four 65-year-olds today living past the age of 90, you may be retired longer than you are actually working. Have you devised a plan, process, and discipline to ensure that you will not run out of money? If you are not sure what to do, then simply contact Peter Weitz and his retirement team at Fusion Analytics. We help manage human emotions using three proprietary investment techniques. Our job is to evaluate the forces that the typical investor can't see so that wealth is preserved and not lost. Find out more at inblackandwhites.com. Weitz is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email Peter at inblackandwhites.com. In Black and Whites, we win by not losing.
ERISA 408B2, fiduciary standards, safe harbor, fidelity bonds, record keepers, discrimination testing. I am so confused.
Does your 401k plan have more questions than answers? Peter Weitz and his team of 401k experts have a solution. Their on-site service model distinguishes them from other service providers, and they are specialists in 401k costs, regulations, and compliance. If your 401k plan has more questions than answers, then contact Peter at 877-945-2888 or email him at peter@inblackandwhites.com.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to In Black and Whites. To reach Peter Weitz or his guest today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to peter@inblackandwhites.com. Whites is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email peter@inblackandwhites.com. Now, back to this week's program.
Hi, thank you. Welcome back to the program. My name is Peter Weitz. I'm joined today by Scott Scolacci, an estate planning attorney from Boston, Massachusetts, whose specialty is in gay marriage, or the estate planning, rather, for gay couples. And we've spent a pretty good portion of the show talking about some of the non-nuances, because basically if you're accepted as a gay state, you get the same rights as if you're a non-gay couple. Well, we spent a little bit talking about that. I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about some of the planning things to think about, Scott, and some of the things that couples, gay couples might want to consider, retirement plans, beneficiaries, things that they may want to plan for that are now happening, I'm guessing, later on in life versus a non-gay couple who's had rights for so long that they've planned for it many years prior.
Yeah, so you mentioned retirement plans and beneficiary designation, and that's one where I see a lot of people basically forgetting when they started a job, they filled out a beneficiary form, or maybe years ago took out a life insurance policy and filled out the form. And now, of course, if they years later decide to get married, if anyone is named on that form other than a spouse for retirement plans now, the spouse has to consent to it. So it's really important for people to dust those off and look at them and make sure that either it is your partner or spouse who's named, or sometimes people name their trust, then you get the spousal consent on it so that you don't have any sort of wacky results later on.
Yeah, and that spousal consent's interesting now because it comes from a different perspective. You know, I've been looking, and I've spent a lot of time looking at your book called Whether to Wed, which is also subtitled, but I wanted to make sure I spell it out correctly. Whether is spelled W-H-E-T-H-E-R, and so it's whethertowed.com, a legal and tax guide for gay and lesbian couples. And getting into that, the legal guide, what would you tell if a client walked in or a gay couple walked in off the street today, where would you begin in your process with them?
I really just try to understand what their goals are, like I do with any client, and listen to them about what their wishes are, really try to discover what their assets are, learn a little bit about cost basis and figure out whether there's any tax planning they need, and then really advise them about whether they need a will or a trust, or if they have existing documents, whether they need to be updated based on the current state of the law and the current state of their relationship. And then, of course, we have the whole discussion. If they're married, we go down one path. If they're thinking about it, we talk about the pros and cons. And I always tell them, look, I'm going to be Switzerland, and I'm going to leave at the door all the other more important aspects of this question, like, I don't know, love and commitment. And I'm just going to help you evaluate the legal and tax pros and cons. And then you can figure out what weighted importance you want to give to each of the factors and just tell me whether you're going to tie the knot or not. And then we'll plan accordingly. Because as you know, for a married couple, you can plan to have an unlimited transfer at death, but you'd want to set up certain marital trusts to make sure you preserve the exemption amount and so on and so forth. And if you are not married, then you don't do that same tax planning. So you have to kind of, it's a little bit of horses for courses, depending on what the assets are, whether they're married, whether they're going to get married, and what their wishes are.
Yeah, and you cover in your book a section on families. And I was wondering if there's any differences as to adopting a child in the estate planning world would be versus having the birth child of your own.
So once a child's adopted, it is a child for all legal purposes, including inheritance and so forth. The real issue is whether the adoption is going to be recognized where you live and where you might die, which is why, and I'm not an expert on all the adoption stuff, but most of my family lawyer friends tell me they recommend same-sex couples do a second parent adoption as a belt and suspenders to make sure that both parents have all the legal rights and privileges of a parent. So, you know, same-sex couples create their families in a whole variety of different ways, sometimes with their own genetic material and sometimes not. But it's really important to work closely with a family lawyer to make sure you've dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's, particularly as it pertains to second-parent adoptions.
And so I just to summarize that, you're basically saying, again, going back to your couple that goes to Massachusetts, that gets married in Massachusetts, they adopt a child, they then go back to Florida, which is currently a state not recognized, for gay marriage, and you're saying that if one parent has the adoption rights of that child, that could ultimately affect the estate if the state of Florida doesn't recognize the adoption from both parents?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, that's what
I was saying. You can plan privately to do a whole bunch of things that is a workaround from the state not recognizing your rights. And that's precisely why these people typically set up trusts to make sure, irrespective of what the state's going to recognize, that privately, basically by contract, you make sure that the right people are provided for in your estate plan.
And how would that relate to these days as in regards to healthcare? Is there any, you know, healthcare proxy issues, any you know, things in that regard that they need to plan for?
I mean, it's the same stuff we've always worried about. I mean, you want to make sure that the right people have the legal right to make medical decisions for you if you can't speak for yourself. And again, we're back to this analysis of if you're married and you're in a recognition state, no problem. I walk into Mass General with my husband. They say, come right this way. But if we're in Florida on vacation, they're going to say, hold the phone. Who are you? And you have to produce some documents before you can come any further. And so, you know, not only do you have to make sure you do your documents because you might travel to one of these more hostile states, and sorry, I keep picking on Florida, but there's some horror stories out of there.
You need
to make sure they're readily available. So we have our clients store them on a cloud-based system in Dropbox or something, and so that they can have access to them when they're on their vacations. Because you not only have to do them, but you still have to be able to produce them.
All right, so you picked on Florida, and you know my show happens to be based here. However, I am originally from Massachusetts, so I'm covering both of my jurisdictions. But what's an example of a horror story of what's gone on in Florida as it pertains?
And by the way, at least I give Florida some credit. I mean, there are a number of state courts who have started to recognize same-sex marriage. So those cases are on appeal, but there are some glimmers of hope in the Sunshine State these days. No, the horror stories are, you know, people who literally were married and had the horrible, tragic thing happen, and the spouse wasn't allowed into the intensive care unit and died without their spouse by their side because they weren't permitted to be present because they were considered a legal stranger. I mean, it's everyone's worst nightmare.
And beyond healthcare, are there other horror stories as relates to this issue of same-sex marriage in a state like Florida where things could come up?
Well, it comes up a lot in the parental rights stuff when the second parent adoption, when the second parent isn't recognized, or if the couple split up and want to have visitation rights, but they're not considered a legal parent, so they're not awarded the right to visit. I mean, there's all sorts of stories like that.
And how do you solve for that? I mean, how would you solve for this, you know, not being by your spouse's side in the intensive care unit?
Well, you know, there's no perfect solution, but, and this is going to sound self-serving, but really go to a good lawyer who understands this stuff and make sure you do the right kind of documents and you have them available. That goes a long way to helping to sort of secure your rights vis-a-vis authorities and other sort of officials at hospitals and medical facilities.
Yeah, and so again, this sort of brings me right back to the question I asked several minutes ago, which is, so now, I mean, it sounds like there's a lot more in the planning up front where people would want to come to you because there's things they need to think about that you've already encompassed in this industry and they may not know about yet, versus knowing that in a typical estate planning situation, I've amassed wealth, I got married, I come to you to create some trusts to help me, you know, separate my wealth and, you know, protect me against taxes and so forth. But it's almost like a completely different subset of really the estate planning piece.
No, it really is, and it doesn't have to be me, but my last chapter in my book, I have a chapter called Finding an LTBG savvy advisor, because a lot of people are marketing these days to the gay and lesbian community because they want the gay dollars, but not everyone is studying the technical issues as carefully, and it's really important to make sure you go to an advisor who understands the technical differences. It's nice that they're sort of cool with you being gay, but you have to be a little bit more than just being cool, you have to understand some of the technical stuff and ask some smart questions and look at their website and see if they've done this before.
And when you're talking about advisors, you're talking about legal advisors, financial advisors, and anyone that they may encounter.
That's right. I would add accountants to that list too. Yep.
Yeah, because I would imagine the accounting of it's going to be could be fairly complex.
Not only can it be complex, but there's a real opportunity for couples who were married to go back and amend some prior tax returns because they might actually get money back. So you have to run the numbers.
Right, and that's an interesting point because they have a look-back period now that they were married. And I guess your comment is just do the math, and if it makes more sense to stay single, stay single. Otherwise, if it makes sense to get married, go that way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'd say it that simply because there are other reasons why you'd get married, right? So
right.
It depends on how you value the overall thing. If the only analysis is legal and tax, then you'd reach the conclusion the way you just said. But sometimes there's other intangible, sort of softer reasons that add to the equation. I had a couple recently who would have been in a much better estate tax perspective if they were married, but they'd always kept their assets separate and they always believed in keeping everything separate and they just didn't want to get married. And I've also had couples who, you know, wanted to get married just because they really wanted to be married and they felt like they had worked hard to get the rights. So it's a little bit blurry for people and, you know, we confuse it as a society because we have this ritual of weddings and religious ceremonies and, you know, what we're talking about here is civil marriage. What I tell couples, because a lot of times we'll have this discussion and they'll say, you know, it probably makes sense for us to get married. And then the other one will say, oh my God, who are we going to invite? And I would say, look, just because you're getting married doesn't mean you have to have a big party. You can, but you can just go to a justice of the peace and basically not tell anyone other than your lawyer and accountant, too. So, you know, you be careful to not blur all the sort of emotional and societal and even religious issues with the pure civil legal marriage issue.
Well, and it's funny because you're talking about what, you know, was always deemed to be this, you know, right and you know, something that's so sacred to people that, oh, I'm getting married. And it's become almost, you know, almost like you have to think about it as a business.
A little bit. And like I said, for couples who have been together for decades, they've already figured out their relationship stuff. And now the only reason they're doing it is maybe for legal or tax reasons. The younger gay and lesbian couples are thinking about it very differently, like any young people would in terms of love and commitment and starting their families and so forth. So I think it really depends on where you are in your stage of life.
Yeah, and that's a good point. We're going to take a quick break, Scott. When we get back, I want to still make a go back to your book, and I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, particularly as it relates to some of the things they should be asking their financial advisors, and I want to get your opinion on that. You're listening to the In Black and Whites radio program on Voice America Business.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
What are your business goals? How do you plan to accomplish them? Your strategy for business growth matters, and the experienced corporate lawyers at Retzel will collaborate with you to develop and execute a customized plan designed to unlock value at your enterprise. Whether the growth you seek is domestic or international, organic or driven by acquisitions, our attorneys are here to propose innovative solutions and assist you every step of the way. For more information, visit us at www.ralaw.com.
Climbing Mount Everest is an amazing feat, and many have died trying to do so. However, more people have died descending Mount Everest than in reaching the summit. Part of the problem may be that people are so focused on reaching their objective that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will do or should be prepared for afterward. Similarly, people are so focused on saving for retirement and reaching retirement that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will encounter once they have actually retired. With one out of every four 65-year-olds today living past the age of 90, you may be retired longer than you are actually working. Have you devised a plan, process, and discipline to ensure that you will not run out of money? If you are not sure what to do, then simply contact Peter Weitz and his retirement team at Fusion Analytics. We help manage human emotions using three proprietary investment techniques. Our job is to evaluate the forces that the typical investor can't see so that wealth is preserved and not lost.
Find out more at inblackandwhites.com. Whites is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email Peter at inblackandwhites.com. In Black and Whites, we win by not losing.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to In Black and Whites. To reach Peter Whites or his guest today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to peter at inblackandwhites.com. Whites is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email Peter at inblackandwhites.com. Now, back to this week's program.
Hi, thanks. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Peter Whites. I'm joined today by Scott Scalacci, an expert in estate planning law, particularly as it relates to lesbian and gay marriage. And we've been spending the bulk of the show talking about some of the complexities and some of the issues from a tax perspective, a planning perspective, a future perspective as it relates to gay couples and what to do and what not to do. And prior to the break, Scott made a point that it's not only vital that your lawyer, your estate planning lawyer, has a very keen knowledge of what the intricacies of gay marriage mean from a planning perspective, but that you also make sure you embrace other financial and accounting professionals that would have a similar type background so that they understand as well. And it's just not so simple because it's not readily accepted in all 50 states, and Scott, please correct me if I'm wrong, that you can just create a plan as you would as if you're a non-gay couple. And for that, you've got to be really astute, and your team has to be really astute as how they put together your plan. So with that, Scott alluded to some of the things that you might want to discuss with your financial team, maybe your planner and or your accountant. And one of those things, Scott, I think relates to income. And you know, my question comes up, and it's alluded to in your book. Again, the book website, Whether to Wed, W-H-E-T-H-E-R-T-O-W-E-D, whethertowed.com. I make more money than my spouse. Should we file our taxes separately?
Oh, that's a great question, Peter. You know, there's a little bit of an urban myth out there that once you're married, you can go back to being single by just filing separately, and it's not correct. The choice you have once you're married is to file jointly or individually, but that doesn't mean that you're going back to being separate. It just means that your itemized deductions are phased out quicker if you do it individually as opposed to jointly. It's rare that you would file separately as a married couple because your itemized deductions are phased out quicker. Usually people do that if their spouse is doing some shady tax thing that they don't want to get tagged with, or the wheels are falling off the wagon in their marriage and they just don't want to combine their finances anymore. But from a pure income tax perspective, once you're married, you're going to be taxed at marital rates. And what that means is the IRS is going to combine your income with your spouse's income as one number to figure out what the effective rate should be for you combined. So for a couple that is kind of the classic old-fashioned couple where they're raising kids and one of them staying at home taking care of the kids and one of them's out working, combined, they might actually get to a lower rate because one's earning something and the other one's not. So when you combine that together, you might push down to a lower rate. But if you have two people that are earning a decent salary and you combine it, you probably are going to get to the higher rate whether or not you file separately or jointly, because the rates are the rates, and this choice about filing jointly or separately doesn't change the rates.
And you know, I have another question too, and this one comes up. I mean, what if one of the spouses had a pension? Would there make any difference if they can they get access to the pension? And does state-specific law have any impact on that?
Yeah, it's a great question, Peter, too, and it's a little tricky, so let me try to answer it. It depends on whether the pension is already in payout status. So, you know, most old-fashioned pensions and a lot of annuities have these election, a one-time election, right when you're getting ready for payout, whether you want to take X amount and then have half of it pay to your spouse if you die, or take a little bit more but have no payout for spouse. And so if you've already made that one-time election, I'm not sure you can put the genie back in the bottle and change the election. There are some cases kicking around for those couples who were married before the marriage was recognized. But this whole area of the law is governed by federal law because it's ERISA and the Department of Labor that manages all the rules around pension plans. And since last year when that Supreme Court case came out, ERISA issued regulations like the IRS, basically recognizing all marriages based on the place of celebration, not domicile, meaning once you're married, you're going to be recognized as married. But if you haven't yet sort of elected the payout status, then like any other financial planning exercise, you should sit down with someone and figure out whether it's better to take the survivor option or not. And it's the same kind of financial planning analysis you'd do with any married couple.
Yeah, and you think about that to take that one step further. So then could you potentially, or do you foresee this happening, if I have an annuity or some kind of pension where it's going to pay for my life and then for a period after my life ends to my spouse, could you see some of these companies turning that spigot off in states that don't recognize gay marriage?
No, they can't, because again, it's federal law that recognizes all these pension benefits. For the annuity contracts, it's different, so it's tricky. But if it's a pension benefit, then it's got to be recognized. The marriage is going to be recognized irrespective of where they live.
And then, so answer that question then. What makes the annuity piece trickier?
Because it's a contract, and the contract's going to be governed by the governing law of the contract. And if the state doesn't recognize the marriage, then that's your answer for now, until that state law gets declared unconstitutional, which is what we're seeing time and time again. So, you know, it's a little bit of a moving target.
And so would they just disallow the beneficiary and create some secondary contingency beneficiary, or does it go to the state?
They may. I mean, you know, we're telling clients is to file the claims, and eventually some of these things are made retroactive effective, including Social Security survivor benefits and all sorts of things, veterans benefits. I mean, a lot of people, while this was still in dispute, were filing claims, and then once the Supreme Court last summer decided this, the benefits paid out retroactive.
And you make a reference in your book to what you're calling the eighth wonder of the world. Can you tell me what that is?
I call that the beauty of tax-deferred compounding. So, you know, in all retirement plan savings like IRAs and 401ks, you don't have to pay income tax on the income while it's growing until you retire and start taking it out. And if you roll it over to your spouse, you can continue that growth on a tax-deferred basis until, of course, the ultimate beneficiary reaches the minimum 70 and a half and has to start taking required minimum distributions. But if you can do these IRA stretch-outs or rollovers for spouses, then you can continue the beauty of tax-deferred compounding. That's what I call the eighth wonder of the world, because the numbers start get considerable over time.
And do any of – I would imagine the answer is no, but I just want to make sure the listener says, would any of this potentially change if there's no will in place?
Yeah, it does change if there's no will in place. And again, it depends on whether you're in a state that recognizes the marriage or doesn't. If you're in a state that recognizes the marriage, then under that state's law as a spouse, you'll still be entitled under intestacy to receive. But if you're in a state that doesn't recognize the marriage, then you'll be considered a legal stranger and not be able to inherit.
And then it would have to go through the probate system and so forth.
It always goes through probate when you don't have a will either way. The question is who gets it? And it's a spouse if you're in a recognition state, and not a spouse, it's going to be other heirs at law or immediate family if you're in a non-recognition state.
And are you finding that cases are popping up in this regard?
All the time.
Yeah, and I would imagine, yeah, that's probably a full-time job keeping track of that.
It is indeed.
Yeah. And Scott,
I mean,
thank you.
You know, these cases, Let me just say, people really should try to avoid the cases, because the only time you're dealing with this is when you're grieving because something awful has happened. So if you do your planning with a good advisor, then you won't have to worry about this stuff at a stressful time in your life.
And that's a great place to stop. Scott, give my listeners, before we exit for the day, give them a way that they can access you if they have any additional questions.
So if you go to the weathertowed.com website, you can be in touch with us that way. We also run a website called gayestateplanning.com. Either way, you can reach us. The law firm is Squillace Law, and you can find us by Googling us. It's S-Q-U-I-L-L-A-C-E. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Peter. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and I appreciate that as well, Scott. This is a topic that obviously, if I had you on next week, would be completely different, I'd imagine, than maybe even what we talked about this week.
Keeps changing, for sure.
Yeah, that's sure. And thanks a lot, Scott. I appreciate you being on the program again. Scott Squillace, you can reach him. The website, www.squillace, it's S-Q-U-I-L-L-A-C-E-law.com. And Scott, I appreciate you being on the show. It's been a wonderful program. It's been certainly a learning experience for me, and I really appreciate the time and effort from Attorney Squillace and him taking the time out of his busy day. Once again, you're listening to the In Black and White's radio program. You can follow us on Twitter at Peter Whites. You can look it up on our blog. We'll be posting some interesting tidbits from today's program as well as today's rebroadcast on the blog. It's inblackandwhites.com. Whites is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. You can also email me at peter@inblackandwhites. If you have any questions for Scott, I'd be happy to forward those questions on to him, and I'm sure he'd be happy to entertain a response. Thanks again for listening. You make it a great week. You're listening to the In Black and Whites radio program on Voice America Business. Take care.
Thank you again for tuning in to In Black and Whites. Please join your host, Peter Whites, again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time and 7 a.m. Pacific Time for another edition of the program on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a safe week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.